south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, by popular demand, today we've got our Bitcoin and cryptocurrency update. You know, there's been a big blowout in the crypto market in the last couple of months. Every coin and ICO are way down from their peaks. To be expected, for any of you who have been following the cryptocurrency markets for, let's say, 2 or 3 years, you know, it's like riding a montaña rusa. That's a roller coaster. Montaña rusa. I like that phrase. Don't know how it came about. In Spanish, that means roller coaster. But if you break the words down, it's literally Russian mountain. How'd that happen? How'd the Russians get in the act? Anyway, Montaña Rusa, man, that's what the cryptocurrency market is. And you got to be ready to strap in and be on that ride for the whole run. Because it ain't for the faint of heart. But let me ask you this, or as the Joker would say, riddle me this. We all know the stock market's in a huge bubble. It's going to blow out any second. In fact, it's got the signs of cracking right now. We know the real estate market is beyond overblown in most parts of the states. In fact, analysts are saying the conditions are worse than they were before the 2007-2008 real estate blowout, which nearly took down the whole system. And really, it was only saved by that very last wild card in the deck, QE, quantitative easing. Just a fancy name for the Fed printing money and adding zeros to the ledger of the too-big-to-fail banks and institutions. Meanwhile, millions of millennials, Gen Xers, even baby bummers. Did I say bummer? owe collectively more than $1 trillion in student loans, and that's never going to be repaid. That's impossible. And it gets worse. Nearly every private and public pension fund is bust or deeply in the red, and the hits just keep on coming. So what do cryptocurrencies have to do with all that? Well, think of this for a second. The other day, I was talking to a retired expat insurance broker. Actually, he's in the reinsurance business. You know, most people have never even heard of that. The reinsurance business. Those are companies that insure insurance companies. How do you like that? Insurance companies have insurance against their own catastrophic blowouts that could bring them down. You know, big events like tsunamis, earthquakes, hurricanes. Anyway, he was telling me something I knew already, but a lot of people don't. Namely, that the average pension fund manager in the U.S. is not making that 6-8% annual return. If they don't make 6-8% annually, they bleed cash. And since that 2008-2009 blowout, they can't even park their cash in T-bills without losing a ton of money because they're only paying out between 1 and 2%. Instead, they've been gambling with all that dough and putting it into, guess where? The stock market. Why do you think it's so bloated, overblown, and ready to pop? However, these big pension fund managers know the party's over in the stock market and they're never going to hit that 8% mark anywhere else. Except, you guessed it, by dabbling in cryptos. In fact, they haven't been hitting that 8% for years, which is why they're almost all deep in the red. So behind closed doors, they're in panic mode. If you've got a pension and that's all you're counting on, you should be in panic mode too. And you know what they're doing is playing that musical chairs game. And lately, if you've noticed or you heard the rumors or have some friends or relatives in this spot, more and more pensioners are receiving notices saying they're going to get their benefits cut. That's the new trend, so you better get ready for it. That's why, as this insurance guy reaffirmed, pension fund managers are just licking their chops over the cryptocurrency market. Why? Because for them, it's kind of the last great throw of the dice where they have a good chance of saving the pension fund. That's because of cryptocurrency's gigantic swings up and down, or so-called volatility. And the real potential, and it's been proven over the last couple of years, that certain cryptocurrencies and cryptos as a group can absolutely explode on the high side. And even when they fall, they don't fall and make new lows. Oh, they fall, all right, but they don't seem to fall below the average of their last big run-up. And like this high-powered insurance broker said, You think the big pension fund guys and the institutional investors would keep well away from cryptos? They're just way too volatile. But surprise, surprise, they're absolutely in love with the volatility because that's how you make huge gains you can't make in any other traditional market like stocks, bonds, T-bills, money markets, commodities. Of course, to make those huge gains, you have to be on the right side of the move. And so, like this guy said, behind closed doors, every big institutional fund and big pension fund managers are holding their collective breath and waiting for the SEC, that's Securities Exchange Commission's approval of these crypto financial instruments they can invest in. And like the man said, these big funds will test the waters by putting maybe 5 or 10% of their dough into cryptos and crypto-based instruments, hoping for gigantic moves in the market. And right now, with Bitcoin and the other cryptos way, way down, some of them 70 or 80% off their all-time highs of about a year ago, those big institutional and pension fund investors know cryptos have the capacity to shoot to the moon. So they're dying to get in, but not until the SEC gives approval. And what's holding them up right now is what they call the custodial issue. Who's going to hold the Bitcoin or crypto that needs to be held in reserve to guarantee the funds exist, as with any such investment vehicle? You have to remember, this is a brand new type of market, and rules have to be invented and approved as they go along. But believe me, it's coming. There are dozens of firms that have applied for SEC approval, and all of them have been rejected so far. However, when they come back, they tell you what you have to do or what they'd like to see in the next go-around when you apply again. So dozens of financial firms are now working on those fixes. And what are they? Hey, I don't know anything about the SEC, and it doesn't really matter to me. But rest assured, the crypto market is nowhere from dead. If you think it is, it's only because you're into mainstream news and you haven't been doing your homework. And you know damn well it's the mainstream media, the banks, and the governments that have the most to lose when cryptocurrencies take off again. Now, if you're a hard asset or a hard metals kind of investor or have that distrust, as you should, of governments, the funny money system, and the Federal Reserve, and if you've done your homework and you're a student of history, if you know the stories of some of the great financial kingpins and wizards of the past, you'll hear over and over the same theme on how old money retains its wealth. You know how generation after generation they're able to pass it down, unless their kids, of course, totally fuck it up. You see that happening more and more these days. Anyway, these guys would preserve their wealth over centuries with a system they call a third, a third, and a third. That is shorthand for dividing your wealth into a third land, a third gold, and a third fine art or collectibles. You notice there's no mention of cash, bonds, stocks, or options, do you? That's because the value of land, gold, and art, etc., is its own value. No one's telling you what it's worth. If you don't own it, you don't have it, it's not really yours. That's the point. And there's no issuer like the U.S. government that can suddenly make your land disappear or turn your gold into a worthless piece of metal, because it's the world market that sets the actual value and price. And there's no government that can say a valuable painting suddenly isn't worth it anymore. And no government can print copies that aren't forgeries either. Of course, it's always possible. There could be a war, a dictatorship where an army can confiscate your land, but they can't take your gold or your art because it's portable. If you got the brains to get it out when you see the signs of bad things ahead. However, nothing's without risk, but that system, a third, a third, and a third, has proven the test of time, of centuries, of millennia. Currencies and countries come and go and governments go bankrupt. But land, gold, of course silver too, collectibles and artwork always have value. But these days, in the 21st century, governments are so powerful, they can stop you from moving your stuff around. I mean, come on, try taking some gold, silver, artwork, collectibles, whatever, out of a country you want to escape from. Big problem. That's where cryptocurrencies come in, which is why so many people are now saying, look, time to revise that wealth formula a little bit. Let's have it one-third land, one-third art and collectibles, and let's split that precious metal gold thing 50-50. Half gold and precious metals, half cryptocurrencies. You know the why, because you can transfer the stuff around the world without anybody confiscating, taxing, or stopping you from doing it. You all know the positives of cryptocurrencies and why they exist, but you should remember one super important thing. That is, As funny money fiat currencies crash and crumble and you can't transfer them around easily anymore, what are the alternatives? I mean, look, foreign banks, to which you'd want to do wire transfers of actual cash as an expat with a plan B, they unfortunately don't want U.S. citizens as customers anymore because the ham fists of U.S. Big Brother have made it impossible with FATCA, GATCA, IRS and U.S. Treasury reporting requirements. Now, you longtime listeners know, here in Latin America, there are some nice, solid, long-term Bitcoin, crypto, and cryptocurrency mining communities. In fact, every Latin country has a nice crypto community, simply because all Latin countries have currencies that are inflating. We're talking about against the U.S. dollar, even though the U.S. dollar itself is always inflating. As far as Latin country inflation, in some cases just severe, like in Argentina, in other cases, totally out of control and in the stratosphere, like Venezuela. Isn't it funny? The biggest Bitcoin community in all of Latin America happens to be in Venezuela. So what's that tell you? Second biggest? Argentina. Why? Because they've had 25% inflation year over year, and this year it's going to be 50%. Could you live with that? Anyway, as you longtime listeners know, at my Expat Insider seminars, I have two very special presenters. The famous Bitcoin Dan, one of the earliest known Bitcoin adopters. He was into Bitcoin when it was in the single digits. Imagine a time when you could buy Bitcoins for under $10 each. Well, Dan and his brother were doing just that. So Bitcoin Dan's on the roster, and Oscar Miner, also a very early adopter. And one of the very early Bitcoin miners. In fact, he was mining Bitcoin because it was the only coin out there. Now, of course, there are hundreds of so-called shit coins, if not thousands. The point is, Oscar Miner really is the expert, the go-to guy for cryptocurrency mining of any kind when it comes to the individual, not the institutional miners who have gigantic energy-sucking warehouses full of crypto mining equipment. So he's the go-to guy for one-on-one mining, if that's what you want to get into. So once again, in just a few weeks at my January 2019 Expat Insider Seminar, the famous Bitcoin Dan will be telling you of the current state of cryptocurrency, and Oscar Miner will be giving us his very learned and expert opinion on the state of crypto mining, and if it's worth it for you to get into it now or not. So if you come to the seminar, you'll have a chance to rub elbows and hang with these guys, and you'll become friends with them. They're both very approachable and love meeting like-minded gringos and expats. Let me qualify that. Our kind of like-minded gringos and expats. Not the ones who are Costa Rica, Panama, or Cancun bound, brainwashed by outfits like International Living. Anyway, so you've still got time to sign up, and you've even got time to kill two birds with one stone, that is, come to the seminar and apply for your Guatemalan temporary or permanent residency. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's seminar link, and find out all about the trip, how to kill two birds with one stone, and how to take that amazing four-day post-seminar John Galt tour. And remember, if you're coming down, you have to arrive in Guatemala by Friday, January 4th, because early Saturday morning we're off and running. So you have to arrive at our first hotel by Friday, January 4th, or earlier. A lot of people do that. They end up coming early or staying well after the seminar, or forever. Just ask Captain Mango. Oh, and he's always one of the mascots on our trip, so you'll get to hang with him, too. I think he's been down here 4 or 5 years now. By the way, he just filled me in on the fact that over that time, he's lost 50 pounds or more. And I asked him, would he have been able to do that if he hadn't come down, if he'd stayed back in Cleveland? He said, Johnny, if I hadn't have come down, I'd probably be dead. I'm serious. And when he said that, he was dead serious too. So Captain Mango no longer resembles his namesake. That's what that Altiplano living does to you. Yep, Captain Mango's a new and better man. And you could be too. Or woman. Anyway, now I want to bring something up I'm sure you've never heard before. Since we're on the cryptocurrency topic, and I know a lot of you listeners got into it early, even though it's taken a big hit, you're still in the black, some way in the black. Anyway, aside from the gains and losses, and believe me, some people I know check the cryptocurrency charts about every hour on the hour. They're addicted to watching that stuff move. And others who bought in don't hardly check it at all. And those are people who generally bought in as a speculation, thinking, hey, if I lose my grand, 5 grand, 10 grand, or whatever, It was a good try, just another speculation in life that could have gone to millions or bust. And truly, that's the best way to look at it. Whether you're investing in crypto, an option, a stock, or your next door neighbor geek's new porno app. The idea is to not lose sleep over it because you got way too much invested. But definitely have something invested, so if it shoots to the moon again, man, you're on that ride. I mean, look, take Bitcoin. There are some people really in the know who are saying, in the near future, it's going to hit 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand a coin, even more. So, if you bought one Bitcoin at whatever today's price is, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, whatever, that kind of investment won't kill anybody. But if it takes that huge shot to the moon, you're on that ride. So it wallows in the mud for a while. Who cares? I know. If you've got cryptos, you're feeling the pain. Even if you bought in very low and are way ahead right now, it still hurts a little, right? Human nature. That said, I want to tell you a little story about trying to bring cryptocurrencies across country borders. That is, taking a hardware wallet across borders. And yes, you absolutely must get a hardware wallet. It's never recommended to keep it on one of those exchanges that's in the ether, you know, like Coinbase. Well, of course, you can put a little in there if you have to do transactions and stuff for a short period of time, and after your transactions, get out. But don't put your mother load in an online crypto exchange or service. Instead, you definitely want a hardware wallet like a Nano or a Trezor. Now you got to hear this story. Entitled, Having a Hardware Wallet. Crossing borders with your crypto hidden in plain sight. And remember, these crypto hardware wallets just don't have the option to hold Bitcoin. They have Ethereum and Litecoin and various other coins. In other words, you have one of these hardware devices that looks pretty much like a little flash drive with some slight physical differences. They're basically bank accounts for all your cryptos. Anyway, here goes. Oh, and let me point out, this is mostly about the Trezor hardware wallet, which you can get for under $100 at Amazon or directly from Trezor. I don't get any money for this. I'm just saying it's very, very good. However, the Nano is good too. It's another brand, a little cheaper. Anyway, it starts by saying, the Trezor hardware wallet has unique advanced features that allow you to hide the true value of what's stored in your wallet from prying eyes, for example, government or TSA inspectors at borders. And it all has to do with that requirement that you can't bring over $10,000 in cash or convertible monetary instruments without reporting that amount, or they'll confiscate your dough. Which actually, by the way, proves government officials don't know dick about crypto or the concepts behind it. Because, you see, if your Trezor wallet or Nano wallet, for example, says that you have $1 million in it, and they make you give the password up, and they see that, you're not actually carrying $1 million of anything across border because it's up in the ether. It's in the internet. It's not in that little device. That little device only holds your passwords, your keys, which allows you access to your accounts on the blockchain through the internet. And I suppose one day they're going to throw some guy in the clink because he's got too much money on his Trezor or Nano when he went through a border, and he's going to contest it in court with a high-powered lawyer, and we're going to find out how that issue plays out in court. The best way to think about it is as if you're bringing a debit card across the border that's loaded up with money in a bank somewhere. You're not really bringing that money across the border. You're bringing the access to that money across the border. You get it? Do you? But you know those border slugs and TSA and such, they're not going to stop you, stick you in a room, and ask you to swipe your debit card so they can see what you got in your bank account, though I wouldn't doubt that's on its way. So in effect, bringing a crypto hardware wallet like a Trezor or Nano across borders is pretty much like bringing a debit card, except for the fact that governments hate cryptocurrencies. Number one, they hate that you have complete control of your money, and they don't. In other words, you've got your funds outside of their banking, revenue, and tax system. And governments are all about control, so they hate that. Anyway, the article goes on to say your Trezor, or that would be your Nano hardware wallet too, has unique advanced features that allow you to hide the true value of what you've got stored on the blockchain. And that's achieved by using what they call passphrase technology. Then it says, as governments worldwide expand their reach and become more intrusive each day, it's only a matter of time until you're asked to declare the value of your cryptocurrency or forced to unlock your hardware wallet at borders. That is, if they find one on you. So, traveling domestically in the U.S., you may encounter various overzealous TSA agents, even, for example, if you're pulled over domestically by the police or state patrol, whatever, and they find you have one of those devices. There certainly will come a time when they're required to ask you how much money you have on your device. Again, it's not really on the device, but it's going to happen, and that's what officials are going to assume. Anyway, the time will come when you'll be confronted and questioned about how much you have on that device. All right, let me repeat this again. It's not the money you have on that device, just the access to that money, like a debit card. But they don't seem to care about that. They think it's money because they don't know any better. So in the future, expect to be questioned. For that matter, expect that governments will disrespect your personal privacy and your wealth. And expect that they'll find more and more reasons to confiscate your wealth. Now, to avoid potentially being detained or denied entry into a foreign country, it states here, safeguards to avoid this have been built into Trezor and Nano hardware wallet devices. For our purposes, let's talk about Trezor. To access the contents of your wallet using Trezor, you simply go on the Trezor website, plug in your device using a USB cable. When prompted, you will then enter your PIN number. By default, this now gives you access to your entire wallet. That's how people usually set up their Trezor wallets, showing the amount of bitcoins or other coins and the US dollar estimated value for the moment. However, that's not the best scenario, is it? Because if in the event you're forced to reveal your password, all your holdings will show up, and you don't want that if you're at a TSA border stop. But hardware wallet designers are a step ahead of that scenario. They've added an extra layer of optional security with passphrases giving you, the user, the ability to compartmentalize your wallet and show only what you want to be shown. For example, suppose you're forced to give up your PIN number and you open up your Litecoin wallet within your Trezor. With this option, you'll have wallet number one that's got its own password that you've selected. And when asked by a government slug of any sort, or even a criminal, what's the difference? You put in the password of the account that only has, let's say, two Litecoins in it. So here's how it would work. You get singled out at a border crossing. They go through your stuff with a fine-tooth comb. It could happen to anyone. Could be bad luck or a bad hair day. Who knows? The TSA slugs then say, ah, a crypto wallet. What's your password? Well, you don't have to give it up, but you're not leaving if you don't, or they're going to keep it. So you oblige, you plug in your PIN number. Then you get a pop-up box that says, please enter your password. Now, of course, previous to this, when you were at home setting up your Trezor or Nano, you've created, let's say, four different accounts with four different passwords. Though you can make just one or two or as many as you want. And the one you open up for the government slugs is the one that has one or two Litecoins or Bitcoins in it, worth well under $10,000, at least for the moment. And that ends the inquisition. You go on your way. All right, now for a real crypto boots on the ground story. A U.S. resident crypto guy was stopped on his way from the States into Mexico at the U.S. side of the border. He got pulled aside for one of those more intensive searches. They dug through his backpack and saw he had some funny-looking flash drives. And he admitted, because he's not the lion type, that it was a crypto wallet. And they pulled him to a side room and asked for his password. Sure thing, Mr. TSA agent, he said. In fact, he said in the moment he wanted to butter the guy up and tell him he looked quite bright for a government worker. Instead, he bit his tongue and kept his thoughts to himself. Then he thought, this guy moves amazingly fast in this sweltering heat for a guy with such a humongous belly and such a fat ass, not to mention his toe-curling breath, so we won't mention it. But he did the right thing, held his tongue, and tried to force a smile. Then he whipped out his computer, plugged in his Trezor, and said, sure thing, Mr. TSA agent, here's my password, have a look. And they did, and he said, what a shame. I currently have one Bitcoin, and as of today, it's worth only $3,500. It says so right on the computer screen. After that, it was see you later, bye, and he was off. Well, not exactly. Turns out, a couple of TSA guys walked in and started quizzing him about cryptos and Bitcoin. You see, he was one of their first interrogation victims, and he dazzled them for a while with some nerd speak till their eyes glazed over, and they said, have a nice trip. So, bottom line, having this kind of flexibility in a hardware wallet gives you multiple options and allows different passphrases to access different parts of your wallet. In that instance, the bad guy, the TSA agent, saw only what Lenny wanted him to see. That goes for someone that might put a gun to your head and say, "Give me your Bitcoin." There have been cases like that before, especially on the Russian side of the planet. You know, loose lips sink ships and all that. Anyway, since there's really no way that anyone can prove there's another wallet behind the one you've admitted to the attacker or the TSA agent or the guy with a gun at your head, that should be the end of it. All right, and for all you listeners out there who might have hardware crypto wallets, Trezor, Nano, whatever, there's another way to travel the entire world with all your crypto access and never get hung up. By the way, you really only have to worry about this at all going through first world border crossings, because in the third world, man, you know, they got chickens and goats going through. Let's just say in third world countries, crypto wallet shakedowns are going to be a long, long lag time away. But I digress. I was going to tell you another way. Yeah, you know, when you get your hardware wallet, you write down your 24 secret words or keys. And that's in case your device screws up or you lose it or something. You buy another one and you can reload that new blank device with your 24 words and you're back in business instantly. So why not just travel around with those 24 keywords? Then, if you need to pull some crypto out or move it around, you'll have to get another new or formatted Trezor or Nano and reload those 24 words. Now, you just can't go in a Walmart or a computer store and buy a Nano or Trezor, not in the third world anyway. However, you can order that stuff right on Amazon from any one of those dropship companies, but it'll take probably 2 weeks to get to you. Either that, or you can travel with a blank one so that it has no passwords yet. It's basically empty, a blank slate. As soon as you plug it in, you can see it's game over. No crypto there at all. It's not even set up. So that's an option. All right, there you have it. A couple of ways to go through international borders with your crypto intact. Now, I can't say that you're not going to be a nervous wreck if you get tossed into a room and TSA gangs up on you. But then again, these days, the whole world is nervous when going through a TSA checkpoint. Oh, and by the way, you can find out exactly how to set up those hidden accounts on YouTube. Where else? Oh, and before we finish, I'd like to remind you about my Latin American healthcare report. 100 pages of everything you need to know about getting first world healthcare at third world prices. Check it out at www.thenewexpat.com.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.